This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Let's just be blunt about the question. When a white nationalist massacred 22 people in an El Paso Walmart last week, who, besides the shooter, had blood on their hands? Most of the media commentary on that question this week focused on the most obvious culprit.
Tonight, President Trump's own words are coming under increasing scrutiny.
Yesterday, Trump made no attempts to reconcile his condemnation of hatred with his persistent anti-immigrant rhetoric and made no mention of Hispanics or Latinos.
Which was not like him. Here's Monday's teleprompter Trump interwoven with unscripted Trump.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism.
They're bringing drugs.
Bigotry.
They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
And white supremacy.
Very fine people on both sides.
These sinister ideologies must be defeated.
I'm a nationalist, okay? I'm a nationalist.
Hate has no place in America. We must stop the glorification of violence in our society.
But how do you stop these people? You can't. There's no... That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that stuff.
That montage is a product, obviously, of sound editing. But more importantly, of contextualizing, which is crucial to journalism. And yet so often absent, partly because it can be confused with editorializing. So if we're in search of enablers of murderous demagoguery, we can't entirely exclude the mainstream press, which in its determination to avoid the appearance of bias, let alone activism, chronically soft-pedals depravity, whether with bland, euphemistic language.
A divisive chief executive who has discarded countless norms.
Or careless water-carrying for big lies. The first edition of Tuesday's New York Times headline about Trump's post-El Paso, post-Dayton address, Trump urges unity versus racism, was nominally accurate but unforgivably devoid of context. Like reporting on 9/11 by saying, sunny day in New York City. And we get suckered by the same con again and again.
He said these sinister ideologies must be defeated, and he really did set a different tone than he did in the past when it comes to condemning this hate.
Maybe someone should inform CBS's Weijia Jiang that while Trump was reading empty pieties from the teleprompter, his million-dollar-plus Facebook ad campaign was warning supporters of the Hispanic invasion. The press is also compromised by its obsession with novelty. The new in news, the impulse to advance a story, not revisit it, no matter how horrendous. It's like climate coverage. Yeah, the planet is being destroyed, but didn't we do that story last winter? The On the Media team, I must say, wrestled over the question of old newsness with whether to say any of this. Of course, on the matter of culpability for bloodshed, careless reporting is a mere annoyance compared to organized obstruction. For decades, the NRA has used its silver or lead strategy, campaign cash bribery or electoral destruction, to block nearly all gun control legislation. And there's the GOP, which, with plenty of craven Democratic Party assistance, has steadfastly done the same, no matter what happened in Columbine, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Charleston, Parkland, Orlando, San Bernardino, Sutherland Springs, Las Vegas, Pittsburgh, Dayton, or El Paso. There are also the non-mainstream media, subreddits like R the Donald and message boards like 8chan, safe haven not just for trolls, but militant racists, white supremacists, and sociopaths, including the shooters and massacres in New Zealand, Canada, and again and again and again here. They exchange propaganda, memes, and tributes to mass murderers, not only to find common cause, but to proliferate their message and radicalize the like-minded. In other words, as we reported after Christchurch, they are integral moving parts in an elaborate racist, misogynist machine, which is why this week the founder of 8chan declared that the board should be shut down. But as El Paso buries its dead, I bury the lead, because the racial hate machine has an engine. It's called the Fox News Channel.
It does seem like the America that we know and love doesn't exist anymore.
There are so many communities across this country that have become dumping grounds for refugees who are not properly vetted and who have shown none of the qualities that we want in the people who come here.
Massive demographic changes have been foisted upon the American people. And they're changes that none of us ever voted for, and most of us don't like.
Any nation should be upset and outraged when there's an invasion by foreigners into their country, people that have no respect for the rule of law.
This is a country where the average person is getting poorer, where the suicide rate is spiking. White supremacy, that's the problem. This is a hoax, just like the Russia hoax. It's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. That's exactly what's going on.
The effort here is to replace kind of the old America with a new America who's not coming into the country legally.
Now you know the answer. They're not their base anymore. They've replaced you.
That last one was Tucker Carlson, Fox's race baiter in chief. Please note that replacement and invasion are recurring themes in the El Paso shooter's social media post supposedly justifying his violence, as they were in Christchurch, as they are on 8chan and the rest of the right-wing echo chamber. You'll recall the Nazi chant from Charlottesville.
You will not replace us! You will not replace us!
It's not just rhetoric. It is liturgy of the sort repeated solemnly every day on Fox, because the hate engine is also a profit engine to the tune of more than $2 billion a year. What began as a cynical platform for pandering to conservatives mutated into the propaganda arm of the GOP and has devolved still further into a bellows for burning white resentment. It trades in rage, bigotry, misinformation, disinformation, conspiracy scenarios, and general incitement. And it does so for money. It's not just that they're extremist ideologues, they are mercenaries. Merchants of mayhem, and this week the price was innocent American life. Blood on their hands? Yeah. Brought to you by their sponsors. So there's the aforementioned carelessness of the mainstream media, and then there is perhaps something more insidious, a tolerance for racism and xenophobia laundered through punditry on electoral pragmatism. In an essay for Slate this week, Tom Skoka observed that tolerance for intolerable ideology is too often advertised as a virtue, in effect trying to make bigotry respectable. Tom, welcome back to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
When did you first begin noticing this phenomenon, the mainstreaming of at least the germ of white nationalist beliefs in, as you call them, the ostensibly liberal media?
It really started jumping out at me in the immediate aftermath of the 2016 election. There was this instant focus on the perceived or projected grievances of the people whose votes would have put him over the top. And a lot of this was being attributed by reputable pundits and reputable outlets to the Democrats' excessive focus on identity politics.
Now to the postmortem of the 2016 election and the call to eliminate two words from the political lexicon, identity politics.
Cultural issues that might be problematic for the party where its kind of identity politics have run up against some of the realities of white working class voters that Donald Trump appealed to successfully.
The talking about the political or material interests of people other than white men constituted an insult that would lead people to support Donald Trump and to turn against the people who talked in these terms.
Now, in your piece, you mentioned several examples of sort of ignore racial anxiety at your own peril, and we'll get to them. But I'd actually like to start with one piece that you don't bring up, and that's David Frum's cover story in The Atlantic in April.
Yeah, that piece was genuinely shocking to see. Here's The Atlantic, which is a magazine that has its roots in abolitionism. And this piece was a threat, essentially. How much immigration is too much was the tag on the story. And then the headline online is, if liberals won't enforce borders, fascists will.
Frum wasn't suggesting that there was something fundamentally wrong with our immigration rates, but that as a political matter, if the Democrats didn't clamp down, then right-wingers will.
Right. Milder xenophobia has to be put into practice to contain the threat of the really bad stuff.
And you've seen similar kinds of questions, at least implicit, from the journalist moderators at the Democratic debates, for example.
Just to clarify, would you decriminalize illegal border crossings?
Are you going to decriminalize the border crossings? If so, what are you going to do to discourage people from coming? What are you going to do about this crisis? The questions weren't, how are you going to demilitarize the border? How are you going to de-escalate a situation in which people are being thrown into prison camps and having their children kidnapped from them? People are dying in United States custody under this crackdown, but the moderators weren't offering them those questions. They were challenging them to defend the idea that this country should back down from this current policy.
It was a proxy question for those in the electorate who believe we're being invaded.
Yes. The idea that it was an invasion was built into the questions.
But if the question is political pragmatism, you know, just wanting to win in 2020, for example, maybe locking them out of the debate or the consideration of policy is reckless, if only because that feeds the sense of being subjugated by the corrupted elites, which, as you know, is a narrative of our times. You've seen a lot of that very argumentation on the op-ed pages of the New York Times. The New York enemy of the people Times, for God's sake.
Yeah, they have gone out of their way to be solicitous to this kind of argument. Ross Douthat, writing in the Times, one of the many people who've expressed this idea that behind the calls for immigration reform is this concept that we've lost social cohesion since 1965. And when they say this, it seems like they're folding it into this whole mythology of how there was an era of like true American cultural cohesion after World War II that was abandoned in the mid-60s, hearkening straight back to Jim Crow. Bret Stephens, in response to the Democratic debate, wrote, "What conclusions should ordinary people draw about what Democrats stand for, other than a thunderous repudiation of Donald Trump and how they see America, other than as a land of unscrupulous profiteers and hapless victims? Here's what. A party that makes too many Americans feel like strangers in their own country. A party that puts more of its faith and invests most of its efforts in them instead of us. They speak Spanish. We don't. They are not U.S. citizens or legal residents. We are. They broke the rules to get into this country. We didn't."
Well, there's a word for this. I think it's pandering, which hasn't necessarily well served, let's say, the Clinton administration or the Obama one. I think everybody in American politics of whatever age has, you know, somehow in its collective consciousness, memory of 1972, when Richard Nixon mobilized the so-called silent majority, just buried George McGovern, not to mention 2016. But you think this notion of being realistic about voter concerns has the effect of compromising what should be bedrock principles of democracy and human rights? If I get you right, it's not just capitulation you're talking about, but a de facto endorsement of the bigotry status quo.
Yeah, I think that's right. To argue for bringing this perspective to the table is to tell the people who hold it that they're the true Americans. I mean, that's the thing that's been haunting all this, you know, since 72 at least, right? And there's this sense that the true American legitimacy lies somewhere out there in an angry voter who would be furious if they knew what you were really planning to do in the name of justice and equality. When you see the New York Times going out of its way to criticize identity politics, going too far, it's really fundamentally informed by the idea that this is a discussion that is happening between white people, that like one set of white people is worried about not offending another set of white people. And that's why all the analysis of 2016 seems to be crammed into this model based on 72 and seems absolutely incapable of incorporating the fact that Donald Trump lost the popular vote by a large margin. And it wasn't because a bunch of pointy-headed college professors were voting against him, because the pointy-headed college professors don't have the numbers. The non-white people who make up a huge chunk of the working class have the numbers.
If you could have intervened before David Frum filed his piece, or Ross Douthat, or Brett Stevens, or if you could have stopped Dana Bash from asking about border security, you know, what would you have said?
I would have said, who are you talking about? What do you mean when you are describing these provocations that regular Americans are suffering? Are these your own feelings? And if they're not, why are you raising them?
Tom, thank you.
Thanks.
Tom Skoka is politics editor for Slate, and his piece was titled, Where Taking the Concerns of Racists Seriously Has Gotten Us. Coming up, white supremacy in the White House? Not a new development. This is On the Media.